tonight who are going to talk about the birth of the Lutheran Church and Philip Melanchthon. Some of you have asked that we've talked about Philip Melanchthon. We've talked about indulgences and how it dated back to the Crusades, how men paid money to have others participate in the Crusades in a spirit of doing good works, being pious, doing something for the church. That is a type of indulgence. And then first thing you know, you pay money. After you have a man do it for you, then you just simply pay money. And so on. The idea is not to spend any time in purgatory. The more you pay, the less time you have to spend. And for that, you get a certificate. And that's called an indulgence letter. Now, Luther thought it'd be well to discuss this business of indulgences. Indulgences are right. You should pay for your sins somehow. The practice is fine. But the way it was carried out in these unscrupulous manner in firing up the people and making a big spectacle out of it, in beating the drum and so on, and as I've indicated before, this type of practice Luther wanted to discuss, and he wrote down 95 statements, which we call theses, indicating his ideas on the matter, and he wanted to know what others in the church thought about it. He had no intentions of revolutionizing the church. He merely wanted to discuss the practice of selling indulgences. And thus in 1517, Luther, the serious Christian, who had discovered that he owed his salvation to the deliverance of Jesus Christ, thought he must proclaim this message. And as a teacher and doctor of theology, he felt even more keenly that this was his responsibility. And what was his message? That you don't have to pay indulgences, that salvation is a gift, as indicated in the New Testament. Therefore, he wanted to apply a certain amount of pressure on the Archbishop of Mainz in the form of a public act. According to Luther, the Archbishop had only given his name to that terrible manuscript, the Instructor Sumaria, because of his youthful immaturity and lack of theological knowledge. Now this document, this manuscript that the Archbishop of Mainz signed was instructions on how to sell indulgences. There were some new points in there, something which hadn't been indicated before, that even though the person is dead, you can still buy that person out of days out of purgatory. Even though you haven't even repented your own sins, you're buying the time spent in purgatory of a dead person, you're paying up for this. Of course, is something new in this terrible manuscript. And therefore, he invited the members of the university to a public debate about the beneficial power of indulgences. Catholic scholars have recently questioned whether the 95 theses, printed in Latin, were actually posted on the door of the Castle Church on October 31st, 1517, on the eve of this church's great festival, the Feast of All Saints. In other words, November the 1st, that is All Saints Day, the Feast of All Saints. And then the night before, Luther is said to have posted the 95 theses. Catholics think that's not true. The actual posting of the thesis cannot be proven. Nevertheless, the date remains very probable. There was no great public demonstration when Luther posted these theses, for the majority of the people were not familiar with the Latin language. Now, I've seen a lot of booklets infanticide versions of Luther, nailing the 95 Theses on the Castle Church door in Wittenberg, and there are thousands of people and in the audience and so on and so forth. And I don't know whether it has appeared in some of the movies that this was a great public demonstration, was it? Was that the case? In the movie that you saw?
I think so.
Well, this is erroneous. This is stupid. In the first place, the people couldn't read Latin. They had no idea what was written there. Here's a monk. He had a piece of paper in his hand, and it's all written in Latin, and he's telling other students who can read Latin, or colleagues, let's discuss this matter. There's no reason why throngs and thousands of people should be there watching him nailing on these 95 theses. What was your question?
There's another observation I read too, that often things were nailed to those doors.
Well, that was the next statement. Frequently, the castle...
Yeah.
That was the next statement here. Frequently, the castle church door was used as a bulletin board by the students and the faculty member of the university. So, every time I post something at a university, at the bulletin board university, or at the college, I never see throngs of people. You know, I never see that.
Yeah. 95 items.
And sometimes I have a nice little post about a German meeting or something like that. There aren't any throngs of people watching me do that.
The main Luther film, at least the one that I've seen, does not do that. It shows two peasants walking up to the door and not being unable to decipher it and go back and sit down and said that's something that, you know.
Yeah, now that makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
There are people in the marketplace around.
Oh, yeah, because...
But no one is demonstrating or making any spectacle out of this.
Well, actually, the market square is farther down.
Well,
the actual marketplace is farther down.
They showed Luther kind of walking through that.
Yeah. The market square is here, and then you go down the street a little bit further, and there's the castle church. But yes, I can see with a lot of people in the market square, but... at the same time, Luther sent additional copies of these theses to the advisors of the archbishop to bring this topic to his attention. In other words, he wasn't going over anybody's head. He simply went according to the lines of authority. He posted the theses, he sent a letter to the archbishop, and he informed everybody these are the kinds of things we're going to do. Besides adding a short treatise on indulgences, Luther enclosed a letter in which he demanded that the archbishop withdraw the Instructio Sumaria, and that is the instructions about selling indulgences with these new provisions in there. Similar documents were also sent to Bishop Jerome Schulze of Brandenburg. In other words, all the important people were informed what was going on and what he was going to do. He didn't step over anybody's heads or toes, or whatever the expression is. What is the expression?
He didn't step on anybody's toes.
Chain of command.
Don't we have any lights in here? I can hardly read. There must be one here somewhere. The reason I want to read it is I want you to have the facts here, and not fantasies. Thank you very much. In no way did Luther act improperly, since there was not yet officially a dogma on indulgences at that time. It was not formulated until the Council of Trent, which was much later. Besides that, the 95 Theses did not even contain a general attack on the concept of indulgence. Luther attacked only the rise of indulgences as a substitute for repentance. He expressed the nucleus of his belief in its 62nd Theses, which differed from the general practice of the Church. And he said, quote, in the 62nd Theses of the 95, which he posted, "The true treasure of the Church is the most holy gospel of the glory and the grace of God," unquote. Now, after these 95 theses were printed in Latin, the students then translated into German, and in about 50, 60 years ago, Gutenberg invented the printing press in 1542 with the movable type. So that as soon as the students translated the Latin 95 theses into German, it spread like wildfire throughout Germany. And the people started reading these in their own language. Those who couldn't read Latin, well, they were printed then in German. And now it came to religious debates. And the first one was in 1518 in Heidelberg. At first, the 95 Theses created no response, and no one even came for the debate. Although Luther received no answer from his superiors. Then he sent copies of these theses to some of his friends, and now they were copied by hand and reproduced by the printer. And they were translated, thus becoming in a short time well known throughout Germany. With the widespread distribution of the 95 Theses, the great debate began. All kinds of documents appeared. There were those who sided with Luther and those who opposed. Before long, the dispute reached Rome, at first coming into the hands of the highest officials of Luther's order. Luther was given an opportunity to speak when Staupitz, as a special gesture of friendliness, assigned him to deliver these theses and chair the discussion in a debate at the general chapter meeting of the Augustinian Order of Hermits at Heidelberg in April 1518. In other words, the order had a general meeting, and Luther was invited to come to this meeting and defend these theses which he had written. And there he designated true theology, Luther did, as the theology of the cross, the Theologia Crucis. Here in Heidelberg, Luther also dismissed the philosophy of William Ockham and the metaphysics of Aristotle. And in doing so, he attracted many a young humanist. In other words, Luther now had followers. Luther now had people who sided with him, and in particular the humanists. The situation became rather dangerous for Luther when the Dominicans intensified their denunciation in Rome. The Dominicans read these theses, and now they thought, we're going to have to do something. And they appealed to Rome. An overheard discussion played a role here in which Luther had been involved after a sermon he delivered before the nobility of the court of Dresden. Duke George had not been in residence at that time. Luther went and preached in various locations. And at one time, he preached at the court of Duke George. Now, I think I talked about Duke George or Ducal Saxony before. There was the Electoral Saxony, and there was Ducal Saxony. The Electoral Saxony was headed by Frederick the Wise. Ducal Saxony was headed by Duke George. The two were bitter enemies. One was a supporter of Luther. The other one married a converted Hussite, which means that she was Protestant and now has returned to Catholicism. In other words, Duke George and his wife or his mother, I forgot which, they were very devout Catholic, having been Protestant at one time. And Luther and Duke George remained bitter enemies till the end of their days. So when you're talking about Duke George, you're talking about one of Luther's most bitter enemies. And Luther went to this court of Duke George and preached and held a sermon. And after the sermon, naturally, things were discussed. And naturally, the 95 Theses, or parts of it, came up. And in the other room, there were some Dominicans and some Jesuits and some of the others who overheard this discussion. And then they told us then to the Curia in Rome. A final attempt to quench the flames was sanctioned by the Pope. In other words, here is a monk, he's raising some noise, he is trying to criticize the church, and of course the idea is now to quench that flame, to stop this criticism. Final attempt to quench the flames was sanctioned by the Pope. He instructed the temporary papal legate in Germany, Cardinal Cajetan, to interrogate Luther carefully in Augsburg. Luther was supposed to have gone to Rome. Like most people who criticize the church, the thing to do is come to Rome, and then we'll get you before the Inquisition, and then we'll show you some tools that we do to quench these kinds of criticisms. Huh? And be it a Giordano Bruno or be it a Jean Hus, I mean, that's usual, the usual method of quenching criticism. You show them a couple of tools, and if they still criticize, then maybe we can do something else. Maybe we can build a little bonfire. Like they did with John Huss and St. Jerome of Prague. Well, Frederick the Wise would not permit that. He says, you don't have to go to Rome. If they want to interrogate you, let them come to Germany. And so it was decided that they send a delegate from Rome, and this was the papal delegate, Cardinal Cajetan. And he was in Augsburg. In other words, Luther didn't have to go to Rome, he merely had to go to Augsburg. But to avoid any sort of argument, Luther was indebted to his sovereign, Elector Frederick the Wise, for this kindness, that he didn't have to go to Rome. For he wanted to protect the successful professor of his newly founded university, and the Pope did not want to offend the elector on account of the impending election of the king. I indicated before that the elector Frederick the Wise was one of the seven who would vote then for the next king or the next emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And that's a very pretty important position. Therefore, the Pope would like to have his particular person in there, and consequently, he wanted the vote of the elector Frederick the Wise. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. So we got some politics going on in here. The Pope didn't want to offend the elector, and therefore the elector can do various things. And the elector said, I'm not going to send this guy to Rome. He's a pretty good professor. We need him at the University of Wittenberg. Let that be a lesson to you. Presumably, George Palatin, the private secretary of the court of Saxony and spiritual advisor of Frederick the Wise, had interceded in behalf of Luther, who never actually met the elector. That's what I indicated the last time, that he never met the elector. There was always some go-between, some lawyer, some court scribe that carried on the correspondence between Luther and the elector. Although Cajetan was conscious of the responsibility and had a superior knowledge of theology, he was unable to persuade Luther in three separate meetings to recant as demanded by Rome. Luther went to Augsburg, of course, and there he met the cardinal, and he met him there in one of the monasteries, and that's where he stayed, that's where Luther stayed, and then he had the several sessions with him, and they had quite an argument going between Cajetan and Cardinal Cajetan and Luther. But Luther kept saying, no, whatever I've written, I'm not going to retract, I'm not going to recant. And the cardinal kept saying, oh, for heaven's sakes, why don't you recant? No, I'm not going to do that. And Cajetan was actually instructed that if Luther did not recant, he was supposed to place him under arrest and then ship him off to Rome. But during the darkness of the night, Luther left through one of the city gates and returned to Wittenberg. That was a very dangerous situation for him, even 1 year after he posted the 95 Theses. In other words, the argument or the debate was a stalemate. And under the cover of darkness, Luther left the city. In the meantime, Staupitz had relieved Luther of all of his duties to the order so that he had the freedom to devote his full attention to these matters of religious debates. Luther's several negotiations with the Pope's Chamberlain Charles von Miltitz accomplished even less. Miltitz had taken it upon himself to go beyond the task assigned to him by Rome in making unauthorized promises to Luther. In other words, this papal delegate, Miltitz, He started promising Luther and Frederick the Wise all kinds of things, which he was not entitled to do so. In other words, he made fantasies. He made promises which he had no business making to anyone. In other words, he was an out-and-out a liar, an out-and-out shoot, so to speak. And now in 1519 comes the famous religious debate in Leipzig, and that is between Dr. John Eck from the University of Ingolstadt and first of all, Amsdorf, and then later Luther. Luther had promised, actually, in Altenburg he wouldn't do any more debating, he wouldn't do any more preaching on that subject, but he did it anyway. Dr. John Eck, professor of theology at Ingolstadt, succeeded in luring Luther into a public debate after the agreement he had made in Altenburg that he would no longer speak on that matter, which took place in Leipzig in July 1519. In this debate, Eck was successful in forcing Luther to admit that among the articles of the Hussites, many were genuinely Christian and evangelical. Now, actually, when Luther says that many of the articles of the Hussites were genuine Christian and evangelical, he is speaking against the decisions of the Catholic Church. In other words, this is now the break between Luther and the Roman Church. This statement caused the Duke of Saxony, George, later called the Bearded, to become Luther's bitter enemy, since the Duke's mother had been a daughter of a converted Hussite. I just talked about that before. And now, in 1518, we come to Philip Melanchthon. He now comes to the University of Wittenberg. And in the meantime, there was an important development in Wittenberg. In 1518, the university succeeded in obtaining as professor of Greek the 21-year-old Philip Melanchthon, who was the grandnephew of the famous humanist John Reuchlin. Now, to be a professor at the age of 21, I mean, that's quite an accomplishment. To have completed your university studies at the age of 21 is a superhuman accomplishment, even in the 16th century. This young man was a brain. This young man was raised in southwestern Germany near Stuttgart, in a tiny village of Bretten is where he was born. And if you go there today, you will see the place of his birth, but the house in which he lived no longer stands. It is a museum. It looks like a huge church. And in it, there are paintings on a wall which show scenes out of his life. From there, he went to Pforzheim, to the Latin school, and received a humanistic education with a concentration on Latin, Greek, and so on. And then from there he went to the University of Tübingen, and from there then he was invited to be professor of the Greek language at the University of Wittenberg, because he was one of the bright young men of that time, sort of a wonder boy. Melanchthon, actually he was a grandnephew of the famous humanist John Reuchlin. Melanchthon was small of physical stature, but of great intellect. Soon Luther sat at his feet to improve his knowledge of Greek. A close friendship developed quickly between the two modern and towering men. Melanchthon, born Philip Schwarzert, from Bretten, located in the hills of the Neckar River, had accompanied Luther to the debate in Leipzig. As anxious as the diplomatic scholar could be, that is, Melanchthon, nevertheless, Melanchthon did not retreat from Luther's side when on June 15th, 1520, the Exsurgi Domini, the bull threatening papal ban against Luther, was issued, and the reformer burned it in front of the Elster Gate in Wittenberg on December 10th, 1520. Together with a copy of the canon law and other books of the church. In other words, a papal bull was issued which threatened the life of Luther, if he kept on with his with his writings. Luther simply went, when he saw the bull, simply took other dogmas of the Catholic Church and took the bull and burned it right in front of the city gates in Wittenberg. Melanchthon presented the forthcoming Lutheran Church with its first dogmatic writing, the Loci Communis Rerum Theologicum, which indicates the theology of the Lutheran Church, the dogma of the Lutheran Church. And that was written in 1521 by Philip Melanchthon. In other words, Melanchthon was the fellow who took down Luther's idea, Luther's theology, and put it into writing, put it into the dogma of the Lutheran Church. It is a sad situation that Luther, it is a sad situation for Melanchthon that Luther and Melanchthon got together. Melanchthon was a scientist. He was a humanist. And what does a humanist do? He goes back to the old writings of the Greeks and Romans, and he translates these writings into German and tries to get back at the old values of beauty, goodness, and truth, and so on. He was a scientist. He wanted to do scientific work. He didn't want to take theological ideas and put them down into dogmatic form. But Luther wanted him to do that. Luther went to Frederick the Wise and said, look, I want this man. I need this man. So please keep him around. And Melanchthon was there almost against his will. And later on, when the bitter controversies developed after the Confessio Augustana, the Augsburg Confession 1530, which Melanchthon then changed in 1540 to a different version, and was accused of being on the side, not on the side of Luther, and so on and so forth. When all these deep religious controversies developed, Melanchthon led a very miserable and a very painful life, and he died a very, very a bitter death because of it. Now, this Loci Communis, which is the dogma of the Lutheran Church, published in 1521, unequaled in its clarity and polished formulations. During this time of utmost external afflictions, Luther's first great tracts of the Reformation period originated. And they are To the Christian Nobility of the German Nation, Concerning the Reform of the Christian Estate, The Freedom of a Christian, and The Babylonian Captivity of the Church, as well as numerous other religious tracts. And that was in 1521. After many negotiations, Frederick the Wise succeeded in bringing Luther to a hearing before the emperor and the diet held at Worms. Now, Worms, of course, is located on the river Rhine in present-day West Germany. So when you go from Wittenberg to Worms, I mean, you got quite a hike ahead of you. And that is a long ways to go. And Luther preached along the way in Weimar, in Eisenach, and even though he was threatened with death, with this papal bull, he said, I would go, even though there were all kinds of devils, as many devils as there were tiles on the houses in Frankfurt. After many negotiations, Frederick the Wise succeeded in bringing Luther to a hearing before the emperor and the diet held in Worms. Luther did not permit himself to be detained from this journey, either by illness or by trick of his opponents to lure him to the Ebernburg castle of Franz von Sickingen. Now, the idea is, if Luther didn't show up on time at the diet in Worms, then there would be great difficulties for him. Then he would have a chance to defend himself and his writings and his theses. So it was a trick by the Archbishop of Trier, who was in cahoots with Franz von Sickingen. He had a castle not too far from Trier. It's called the Ebernburg Castle. It's about halfway between Worms and Trier. So if he had to go there, then he would not have arrived in Worms on time. So that was a kind of a trick. of the Archbishop of Trier. The detour would have caused a delay, and Luther would not arrive in Worms at the appointed time. Frederick the Wise, who was concerned for Luther, dispatched a warning at the last moment through Spalatin. Luther replied, "If there were as many devils in Worms as tiles on rooftops, nevertheless, I'd want to go there." Unquote. Thus Luther, the 36-year-old theologian, stood before the German princes in Worms on April 17th and 18th, 1521. Before him sat the 21-year-old king. That is, later would be the Emperor Charles V. 21 years old. A lot of times you see pictures, fantasized pictures of the king. I am certainly didn't look 21 years old. I saw a plaque on one of the monuments that you find in the various Luther cities. And there the emperor looked like big jowls, and he looked like he's 40, 50 years old. But the fact is that the king, or the emperor before Luther was only 21 years of age. And there's a picture in here which shows him only 21 years of age. When you get tired, let me know. Do you have any questions up to now? Anything that you want to discuss? Are you familiar with the diet of Worms? If you want to lose weight, I recommend you do that. Unless you're interested in losing lots of pounds, then go to England. You don't want to do that either, huh? Well,
I have a yen for Japan.
What's that?
I have a yen for Japan.
You have a yen? Yen for Japan, all right. All right, now we have Luther standing in front of the emperor, for the king at that time, and the princess and so on, and he is now supposed to recant and of course we know he didn't. We know the punchline, he didn't do it. Luther refused to recant his writings. The last few words. Now, that's wrong.
Huh?
Yes, that's wrong. And I was just about to make that comment. Roland Baton's got a book over here. It says, Luther says, "Here I stand." If he would have said it, he would have said, "Here I stand." Nobody offered me a chair. But what he actually said was, "The last few words of his speech before the diet have become famous. Therefore, I can and will recant nothing, because it is neither safe nor right to act against conscience. God help me. Amen." He didn't say, "Here I stand. Nobody offered me a chair." This is what he said: "I will recant nothing, because I cannot act against my conscience. And that is not right to do."
Would you read the whole thing again, just as you said it, please?
"Therefore,"
yes,
"comma, I can and will recant nothing, comma, because it is neither safe nor right to act against conscience, period. God help me. Period. Amen." Another myth has been broken. Also, you will find nothing about the ink bottle in here. Also, you'll find nothing about the Christmas tree in here. That Christmas tree didn't really get started until about the 18th century in Germany.
You're undoing Emily's German education.
That's tough. I can't help it. Tough.
Yeah, cruel man.
You bet. Why do you think I'm German? The papal ban, already issued on January 3rd, 1521, was followed by the imperial ban, which declared Luther as Vogelfrei.
Oh, Vogelfrei.
Vogelfrei. A wanted man.
Free bird.
A free bird, a wanted man, who could be killed at sight. Unsigned. The ban also threatened anyone who, quote, harbored him or gave him food or drink. In addition, all Luther's books were to be burned, and all books printed in Germany had to be censored by the officials of the Roman Church. That was the Edict of Worms in 1521, and the rulers of each territory had to abide by it and carry it out. Frederick had anticipated these actions. Therefore, an attack on Luther was staged near Altenstein, and the reformer was brought in form of protective custody to the nearby Wartburg Castle. Very interesting. A wagon rolls out, and there's Luther and all his buddy, Armstorff, and everybody in the wagon. They're going out of Worms. And as soon as they get near the castle, in the Thuringian forest, deep in the Thuringian forest, a bunch of riders storm out of the woods and start staging an attack, beating these people up and get out of that wagon, and they grab him physically. And Armstorff didn't even know what's going on. His close associates had no idea what was going on. Here they grab Luther out of that wagon, drag him onto a horse, and they race him up to the castle of Wartburg. That was all staged. And of course he was in monk's clothing. And here in the castle he had to change from a monk to a knight. He had to grow a beard. He had to carry a sword. He had to ride a horse. First, of course, he had to spend some time in hiding in the jail or somewhere. That's where Bobby threw him in jail, in hiding, so that he had time to grow a beard. You don't grow a beard like that, you know, in overnight. Unless you're on stage here at the center, then of course you can grow anything overnight. But he had to grow a beard. And I'll show you a picture in a minute what he looked like. But not only that. He had to lead the life of a knight. Go jousting and hunting and eat this heavy food and drink like the knights and eat like the knights. And that's a complete change from the diet and the life of a monk. Consequently, that affected his stomach. Consequently, that affected his health. And that poor man was sick. How would you like to be a monk for a long time and all of a sudden live the life of a knight and eat all that fancy stuff? You too would get sick. And this sickness has afflicted him then practically all of his life. The stomach problems and other kinds of problems. And not only that, the psychosomatic problems of all these religious difficulties and so on, the problems within the church and without, and religious wars, and all these things lay heavily upon his mind and body and affected his body. And he became he got a new name, no longer Martin Luther, ex-Mansfeld, or Martin Luther, as he changed it at the University of Wittenberg, but his name was Junker York. York comes from George. People have asked me in the area, what's your name? I said, my name is George. I like that name, George. It comes from Junker York, J-O-E-R-G. As Luther was called, grew a beard and let his hair grow in order to change his appearance from that of a monk to that of a knight. Lucas Cranach, to whom we are indebted for many portraits of the Reformation period, made a likeness of Luther in December 1521, when he once secretly came to Wittenberg during Luther's stay at the Wartburg. Now Luther stayed some 300 lonely days up there in this castle Wartburg. As I've indicated before, it's just on the outskirts of Eisenach, which is not too far from the present-day Iron Curtain. And there it is situated high on a hill and in the depths of the Thuringian forest. As a matter of fact, some have even called it in the land of the birds, because the birds keep flying around there all the time. And it is an area similar to the foothills of Holden Village, with many trees and many pine trees and beautiful, I say foothills, because they certainly don't have these kinds of hills like Martin's Ridge and so on. I mean rolling hills, you know what I mean? similar to the hills of Virginia. All right? Blue Ridge Mountain, something like that. That's what the Twin Indian Forest looks like. And that's where Luther stayed then, in this land of the birds, in his castle, in this loneliness up there. And that's where he had his room. Now, Luther worked with intensity during his 10-month forced loneliness and stillness at the Wartburg Castle. He had to send by messenger to get books and messages out of the castle to Wittenberg and to let his close friends know where he was located. But the word around the country was the man is dead. And even Albrecht Dürer mourned his death. Mm. Others had also believed that he had been killed. His most famous work was the translation of the New Testament from the Greek text, which Desiderius Erasmus had published just a few years earlier. Luther is, of course, famous for the translation of the New Testament and the Castle of Wartburg. But he also wrote other things up there. And these are the things that may not have occurred to you. And there have been many translations of the Bible. There must have been about 30 or 40 translations of the Bible before Martin Luther. But what Martin Luther has done, he has gone to the original Greek, the original Hebrew, and the original sources, so to speak, and not simply translated the Catholic version of the Vulgata, the Latin, and then into German. And that is, of course, is the great work of Luther. To be sure, Luther and Melanchthon looked over the translation before it went into printing following Luther's return to Wittenberg in 1522. However, Luther's extraordinary grasp of the language, his original, poetical, and expressive use of words makes the translation of the New Testament Luther's own work. Luther went into the streets. He listened to the words of the people. He went into the restaurants, into the beer gardens. He listened to the words of the people. The New Testament is for the people, not just a few intellectuals. It is for everyone, also those who sit in restaurants and drink beer. They too should understand what is written in the Bible. And that is the reason he chose these kinds of words, these expressive words. And when, for example, you hear the 23rd Psalm, Der Herr ist mein Hirte, I mean that has such meaning to everyone, not just the intellectuals, or Unser Vater, der du bist im Himmel. When you hear that, it has meaning to everyone, and not just a certain segment of society. And that is the beautiful thing about Martin Luther. And the way he chose those words, they still have such a ring to it, that has such a poetic form, that it is a joy to read it in German. And, of course, English too. But I like to read it in German. And when I teach German, I always make sure that my students learn at least the 23rd Psalm, the Lord's Prayer. And I always read them the German story at Christmas time in German. In Luke or whatever it was, you know, and I just like to hear that ring of the language. Maybe I'm prejudiced, but I'm also ticklish, so what's the difference? I don't know why I'm rambling on here. Where was I? Any questions? Any comments?
Yeah,
anybody sick?
I've often heard that Luther did for the German language in the translation of the Bible what Shakespeare did for English and Dante did for Italians, the way that people often sum it up.
That's right. As a matter of fact, through Luther, the New High German was originated, and he's supposed to have been the father of New High German, which later then became the High German we speak today. For the first time, New High German was utilized in a literary manner. The book was published in September 1521, that is the New Testament. Thus received the name September Testament. Lucas Cranach and his workshop supplied the woodcuts used in the Book of Revelation. In certain details, they are reminiscent of Dürer's work in Nuremberg. Luther completed at the Wartburg Castle one of his most comforting religious tracts, his exposition of the Magnificat, which is a nice little booklet dedicated to Franz von Sickingen. He also wrote a controversial treatise, The Judgment of Martin Luther on Monastic Vows. And this is where he indicated that the people should leave their monasteries and convents and attract concern with the abolition of the monastic system because it had become so corrupt and really did not serve any more useful purpose. And he dedicated a small book about the confession to Franz von Sickingen that offered Luther a sanctuary and protection and so on. Only a few people knew where Luther was located. Some even mourned his death. It was now evident that Charles V had erred when he thought it was only a matter of a single brother. Charles V, of course, at the Diadem, informs it, oh, well, if we get rid of this brother, if we get rid of him, then we're all set. But now it is not just a matter of one individual, but rather of many. The reform movement continued to move forward, but at first not in a manner that Luther had intended. And now then, Luther returns to Wittenberg after his stay at the Castle Wartburg. He actually was taking his life in his own hands by returning to Wittenberg, but the council, city council, needed him. There was unrest spreading. People started taking his tracts too literally. They started smashing the relics and the religious paintings and sculptures and all these kinds of things in churches. They stripped them bare and so on and so forth. All kinds of misinterpretations of Luther's theology originated, and there was trouble ahead. In Wittenberg itself, the radicals gained ground. Here, priests and monks married. The first was Bartholomeus Bernhardi, senior pastor in Kemberg near Wittenberg. Some began to celebrate the Lord's Supper in two forms. That is, they also gave the cup to the laity. This was the custom which had not been practiced for centuries and which only the dissidents, such as the Hussites, had introduced again 100 years previously. In other words, the Hussites are the ones that also gave the cup to the laity, to the people. Finally, the abolition of monastic life was publicly demanded, and there were even some minor iconoclastic riots. That is, they destroyed the paintings and the religious paintings in churches. Luther's colleague Karlstadt placed himself on the side of the agitators. Against the will of the elector, Luther left his refuge in the Wartburg Castle, responding to the call of the city council of Wittenberg, and returned to the city on March 9th, 1522. He preached daily for a week in his habit and tonsure. And these are the famous invocative sermons. His 8 sermons appeared in summary in April 1522 under the title Receiving Both Kinds of the Sacrament. Luther restored peace and order to Wittenberg again, even though he was not able to win back the support of the radical Karlstadt. Certain earlier abuses were removed. Monks and nuns continued to marry, and in the following year, the number of those who left the monastic life grew steadily, even far beyond the limits of Wittenberg. The evangelical message was also spread by word of mouth and in written form far beyond Wittenberg. Merchants took the writings of the reformers into the farthest corner of Europe, and from the most distant regions, young men came to Wittenberg as students in order to hear new teachings, which they then made known in their homeland. And then there are a series of pictures. Here you see the 95 Theses in Latin. Here you see the castle church door. The wooden door burned down in the 18th century, and they then replaced it with a bronze door, and the 95 Theses are embossed then in this bronze door. Conference in Heidelberg. Here you can see the break. Here is the the Pope, and here is the Emperor, and this is that erred monk, the one against the Pope and the Emperor. This was done in 1535, and I found it in an alley in Leipzig. Duke George de Bearded, you can see the nice beard, and the conference with Cajetan took place in Augsburg in this monastery, cloister. An original letter by John Staupitz, and here's Spalatin, the court scribe. Here's Altenburg, where the conference with Miltitz took place, and then here's the famous Dr. John Eck, professor of Ingolstadt, and the debate in Leipzig. The ceremonies began in the St. Thomas Church in Leipzig. Here's the main portal of it, and another view of the cathedral, and this is where the actual debate took place, in the tower of the old Pleissenburg, which is now the City Hall. Here's a graving of Melanchthon by Albrecht Dürer, 1526. Here's a writing by Melanchthon, and here's Melanchthon's home, which was right across the street from the university in Wittenberg. Here's his room with his desk, and in spite of the agreement made in Altenburg, Luther kept on preaching. And here's a copy of the bull threatening Luther's death. And Worms, this is where the diet took place. All the remains are a few stones right next to the cathedral in Worms. One of Luther's Protestant writings, reformatory writings, von der Freiheit eines Christian Menschen, of the freedom of the Christian man. And here is Emperor Charles V as a young man. That's the way he's supposed to look, not as an old man, as a young man. Notice he has a nice little page boy there. Would you like that hat? You don't like it. And this is the place near the Castle Wartburg where the attack on Luther, quote, took place, the Castle Wartburg in Eisenach. And this is, here he is as the knight with the beard. And this was painted then by Lucas Cranach. Here is one of his religious tracts that Luther wrote on the Castle of Artwork. It deals with what psalm is it? 68th psalm. And this is his room in the Castle of Artwork, beautifully maintained. On the right here, you would, under other circumstances, see the plaster that's been torn away, the ink bottle and so on. None of that is mentioned in here. Stay away from these fairy tales. New Testament of 1521, published in 1522. And these are the woodcuts. Here are the four writers of the Acropolis. Woodcuts by Lucas Cranach. And this is the first priest that got married. And this is Karlstadt. You can see him smashing all the religious symbols in the church, which, of course, Luther didn't like at all. Next time we'll talk about theological controversies and religious wars, including the peasant war of 1525. Auf Wiedersehen.